Mind Web story that comes from the book New Dimensions 2, edited by Robert Silverberg. This is Urema's Dam, written by R.A. Lafferty. He was about the last of them. What? The last of the great individualists? The last of the true creative geniuses of the century? The last of the sheer precursors? No. No, he was the last of the dolts. Kids were being born smarter all the time when he came along, and they would be so forevermore. He was about the last dumb kid ever born. Even his mother had to admit that Albert was a slow child. What else can you call a boy who doesn't begin to talk till he's 4 years old, who won't learn to handle a spoon till he's six, who can't operate a doorknob till he's eight? What else can you say about one who put his shoes on the wrong feet and walked in pain, and who had to be told to close his mouth after yawning? Some things would always be beyond him, like whether it was the big hand or the little hand of the clock that told the hours. But this wasn't something serious. He never did care what time it was. When about the middle of his ninth year, Albert made a breakthrough at telling his right hand from his left. He did it by the most ridiculous set of mnemonics ever put together. It had to do with the way dogs turn around before lying down, the direction of whirlpools and whirlwinds, the side a cow's milked from and a horse is mounted from, the direction of twist of oak and sycamore leaves, the maze patterns of rock moss and tree moss, the cleavage of limestone, the direction of a hawk's wheeling, a shrike's hunting, its coiling, remembering that the mountain boomer is an exception, the lay of cedar fronds and balsam fronds, the twist of a hole dug by a skunk and by a badger, remembering pungently that skunks sometimes use old badger holes. Well, Albert finally learned to remember which was right and which was left. But an observant boy would have learned his right hand from his left without all that nonsense. Albert never learned to write a readable hand. To get by in school, he cheated. From a bicycle speedometer, a midget motor, tiny eccentric cams, and batteries stolen from his grandfather's hearing aid, Albert made a machine to write for him. It was small as a doodle bug and fitted onto a pen or pencil so that Albert could conceal it with his fingers. It formed the letters beautifully as Albert had set the cams to follow a copybook model. He triggered the different letters with keys no bigger than whiskers. Sure, it was crooked, but what else can you do when you're too dumb to learn how to write passably? Albert couldn't figure at all. He had to make another machine to figure for him. It was a palm of the hand thing that would add and subtract and multiply and divide. The next year, when he was in the ninth grade, they gave him algebra. And he had to devise a flipper to go on the end of his gadget to work quadratic and simultaneous equations. If it weren't for such cheating, Albert wouldn't have gotten any marks at all in school. He had another difficulty when he came to his 15th year. That's an understatement. There should be a stronger word than difficulty for it. He was afraid of girls. What to do? "I'll build me a machine that's not afraid of girls," Albert said. He set to work on it. He had it nearly finished when a thought came to him. "But no machine is afraid of girls. How will this help me?" His logic was at fault. An analogy broke down. He did what he always did. He cheated. He took the programming rollers from an old player piano in the attic, found a gear case that would serve, used magnetized sheets instead of perforated music rolls, fed a copy of Wormwood's Logic into the matrix, and he had a logic machine that would answer questions. "What's the matter with me that I'm afraid of girls?" Albert asked his logic machine. "Nothing the matter with you," the logic machine told him. "Nothing the matter. It's logical to be afraid of girls. They seem pretty spooky to me, too."
What can I do about it?"
"Wait for time and circumstance. They sure are slow, unless you want to cheat."
Yeah. Well, what then?"
"Build a machine that looks just like you, Albert, and talks just like you, only make it smarter than you are, and not bashful. And, Albert, there's a special thing you'd better put into it in case things go wrong. I'll whisper it to you. It's dangerous." So Albert made little Danny, a dummy who looked like him and talked like him, only he was smarter and not bashful. He filled little Danny with quips from Mad Magazine and from Quip, and then they were set. Albert and little Danny went to call on Alice.
"Why, he's wonderful," Alice said. "Why can't you be like that, Albert? Aren't you wonderful, little Danny? Why do you have to be so stupid, Albert, when little Danny is so wonderful?"
I don't know, Albert said.
He sounds like a fish with the hiccups,
little Danny said.
You do, Albert. Albert, you really do. Why can't you say smart things like little Danny does, Albert? Why are you so stupid?
This wasn't working out very well, but Albert kept up with it. He programmed little Danny to play the ukulele and to sing. He wished that he could program himself to do it. Alice loved everything about little Danny, but she paid no attention to Albert. And one day, Albert had had enough.
What do we need with this dummy? I just made him, Alice, to make you laugh. Let's go off and leave him.
Go off with you, Albert? But you're so stupid. I'll tell you what. Let's you and me go off and leave Albert, little Danny. We can have more fun without him.
Yeah, who needs him? Little Danny said. Get lost, Buster.
Albert walked away from them. He was glad that he had taken his logic machine's advice as to the special thing to be built into little Danny. He walked 50 steps, 100, and then figured far enough. And then Albert pushed a button in his pocket. Nobody but Albert and his logic machine ever did know what the explosion was. Tiny wheels out of little Danny, and small pieces of Alice rained down a little later. But there weren't enough fragments for anyone to identify. Albert had learned one lesson from his logic machine. Never make anything you can't unmake. Well, Albert finally grew to be a man, in years at least. He'd always have something about him of a very awkward teenager. And yet, he fought his own war against those who were teenagers in years and defeated them completely. There was enmity between them forever. He hadn't been a very well-adjusted adolescent, and he hated the memory of it. And nobody ever mistook him for an adjusted man. Albert was too awkward to earn a living at an honest trade. He was reduced to peddling his little tricks and contrivances to shysters and promoters. But he did back into a sort of fame, and he did become burdened with wealth. He was too stupid to handle his own monetary affairs, but he built an actuary machine to do his investing and became rich by accident. He built the damn thing too good, and he regretted it. Albert became one of that furtive group that has saddled us with all the mean things in our history. There was that Punic who couldn't learn the rich variety of hieroglyphic characters and who devised the crippled short alphabet for Wanwitz. There was the nameless Arab who couldn't count beyond 10 and who set up the 10-number system for babies and idiots. There was the double Dutchman with his movable type who drove fine copy out of the world. Albert was of their miserable company. Albert himself wasn't much good at anything, but he had in himself a low knack for making machines that were good at everything. His machines did a few things. You remember that anciently there was smog in the cities? Oh, it could be drawn out of the air easily enough. All it took was a tickler. Albert made a tickler machine. He would set it fresh every morning. It would clear the air in a circle 300 yards around his hovel and gather a little over a ton of residue every 24 hours. This residue was rich in large polysyllabic molecules, which one of his chemical machines could use.
Why can't you clear all the air?
The people would ask him.
Well, this is as much of the stuff as Clarence deoxyribonucleoconibus needs every day,
Albert said. That was the name of his particular chemical machine.
But we die from the smog, the people would tell him. Albert, have mercy on us.
Well, all right.
And Albert turned the machine over to one of his reduplicating machines to make as many copies as were needed. You remember that once there was a teenager problem? Remember when those little buggers used to be mean? Well, Albert got enough of them. There was something ungainly about them that reminded him too much of himself. He made a teenager of his own. It was rough. To the others, it looked like one of themselves. The ring in the left ear, the dangling sidelocks, the brass knucks and the long knife, the guitar pick, the jab in the eye. But it was incomparably rougher than the human teenagers. It terrorized all in the neighborhood and made them behave and dress like real people. There was one thing about the teenage machine that Albert made. It was made of such polarized metal and glass that it was invisible, except to teenager eyes. People would ask Elbert.
Why is your neighborhood different? Why are such good and polite teenagers around your neighborhood and such mean ones everywhere else? It's as though something had spooked all those right around here.
Oh, I thought I was the only one who didn't like the regular kind.
No, no, Elbert. If there's anything at all that you can do about it...
So, Elbert turned his mostly invisible teenager machine over to one of his reduplicating machines to make as many copies as were necessary, and set one up in every neighborhood. From that day to this, the teenagers have all been good and polite, and a little bit frightened. But there's no evidence of what keeps them that way except an occasional eye dangling from the jab of an invisible guitar pick. So the two most pressing problems of the latter part of the 20th century were solved, but accidentally, and to the credit of no one. As the years went by, Elbert felt his inferiority most when in the presence of his own machines, particularly those in the form of men. Elbert just hadn't their urbanity or sparkle or wit. He was a clod beside them, and they made him feel it. And why not? One of Elbert's devices sat in the president's cabinet. One of them was on the High Council of World Watchers that kept the peace everywhere. One of them presided at Riches Unlimited, that private, public, international instrument that guaranteed reasonable riches to everyone in the world. One of the machines was the guiding hand in the Health and Longevity Foundation that provided those things to everyone. Why should not such splendid and successful machines look down on their shabby uncle who had made them?
I'm rich by a curious twist, Elbert said to himself one day. And honored through a mistake or circumstance, but there isn't a man or a machine in the world who's really my friend. A book here tells me how to make friends, but I can't do it that way. I'll make one of my own.
So Elbert set out to make a friend. He made poor Charles a machine as stupid and as awkward and inept as himself.
Now I'll have a companion,
Elbert figured, but it didn't work. Add two zeros together and you still have zero. Poor Charles was too much like Elbert to be good for anything. Poor Charles. Unable to think, he made it. But wait a moleskin glove minute here, Colonel. This isn't going to work at all. He made a machine... But isn't this the same blame thing all over? He made a machine to think for him and to... Hold it. Hold it, that's enough. Poor Charles was the only machine that Elbert ever made that was dumb enough to do a thing like that. Well, whatever it was, the machine that poor Charles made was in control of the situation and of poor Charles when Elbert came onto them accidentally. The machine's machine, the device that poor Charles had constructed to think for him, was lecturing poor Charles in a humiliating way. Only the inept and deficient will invent, the damned machine's machine was droning. The Greeks in their high period did not invent. They used neither adjunct power nor instrumentation. They used, as intelligent men or machines will always use, slaves. They did not descend to gadgets. They, who did the difficult with ease, did not seek the easier way. But the incompetent will invent. The insufficient will invent. The depraved will invent. And knaves will invent. Elbert, in a seldom fit of anger, killed them both. But he knew that the machine of his machine had spoken the truth. Elbert was very much cast down. A more intelligent man would have had a hunch as to what was wrong. Elbert had only a hunch that he was not very good at hunches and would never be. Seeing no way out, he fabricated a machine and named it Hunchy. In most ways, this was the worst machine he ever made. In building it, he tried to express something of his unease for the future. It was an awkward thing in mind and mechanism, a misfit. His more intelligent machines gathered around and hooted at him while he put it together. And they taunted, "Boy, you lost. That thing's a primitive. It draws power from the ambient. Now, we talked you into throwing that away 20 years ago and studying up coded power for all of us.
Well, someday there may be social disturbances in all centers of power and apparatus is seized. But, you see, if that happened, Hunchy would be able to operate if the whole world were wiped smooth.
It isn't even tuned to our information matrix, they jibed. It's worse than poor Charles. That stupid thing practically starts from scratch.
Well, maybe there'll be a new kind of itch for it.
It's not even housebroken, the urbane machine shouted in indignation. Look at that, Albert. Look, some sort of primitive lubrication all over the floor.
Well, remembering my childhood, I sympathize.
What's it good for?
Well, it gets hunches.
Duplication. That's all you're good for yourself, and not very good at that. We suggest an election to replace you as, pardon our laughter, Albert, head of these enterprises.
Boss, I got a hunch how we can block them there.
The unfinished hunchy whispered.
They're bluffing. My first logic machine taught me never to make anything I can't unmake. So I've got them there, and they know it. I wish I could think up things like that myself.
Well, maybe there will come an awkward time, and I will be good for something, said Hunchy.
Only once, and that rather late in life, did a sort of honesty flare up in Albert. He did one thing, and it was a dismal failure on his own. That was the night in the year of the double millennium when Albert was presented with the Finnerty Hawkman Trophy, the highest award that the intellectual world could give. Albert was certainly an odd choice for it, but it had been noticed that almost every basic invention for 30 years could be traced back to him or to the devices with which he had surrounded himself. You know the trophy. Atop of it was Eurema, the synthetic Greek goddess of invention, with arms spread as though she would take flight. Below this was a stylized brain cut away to show the convoluted cortex. And below this was the coat of arms of the academicians, ancient scholar rampant, argent. The Anderson analyzer sinister, duels. The Mondeman space drive dexter, Vare. It was a very fine work by Groban, his ninth period. Albert had the speech composed for him by his speech writing machine. But for some reason he did not use it. He went on his own, and that was disaster. He got to his feet when he was introduced, and he stuttered and spoke nonsense.
Only the sick oyster produces nacre, he said, and they all gaped at him.
What sort of beginning for his speech was that? Albert then asked weakly.
Or do I have the wrong creature? Eurema does not look like that. No, that isn't her at all. Eurema walks backward and is blind, and her mother's a brainless hulk.
Everybody was watching him with pained expression. Albert went on.
Nothing rises without a leaven, but the yeast is itself a fungus and a disease. You be regularizers all, splendid and supreme. But you cannot live without the irregulars. You will die, and who will tell you that you're dead? When there are no longer any deprived or insufficient, who will invent? What will you do when there are none of us defectives left? Who will leaven your lump then?
Are you unwell? The master of ceremonies asked him quietly. Should you not make an end of it, people will understand.
Of course I'm unwell. Always have been. What good would I be otherwise? You set the ideal that all should be healthy and well-adjusted. No. Were we all well-adjusted, we would ossify and die. The world is kept healthy only by some of the unhealthy minds lurking in it. The first implement made by man was not a scraper or celt or stone knife. It was a crutch, and it wasn't devised by a hale man.
Perhaps you should rest, said the functionary. Perhaps you should rest, for this sort of rambling nonsense talk has never been heard at an awards dinner before.
Know you that it is not the fine bulls and wonderful cattle who make the new path. Only a crippled calf makes a new path. In everything that survives, there must be an element of the incongruous. Hey, you know the woman who said, my husband is incongruous, but I never like Washington in the summertime.
Everybody gazed at him in stupor. Then Albert said lamely,
well, that's the first joke I ever made. My joke-making machine makes them lots better than I do. Well, dolts. Dolts. What will you do for adults when the last of us is gone? How will you survive without us?
Albert had finished. He gaped and forgot to close his mouth. They led him back to his seat. His publicity machine explained that Albert was tired from overwork, and then the thing passed around copies of the speech that Albert was supposed to have given. It had been an unfortunate episode. How noisome it is that the innovators are never great men, and the great men are never good for anything but just being great men. In that year, a decree went forth from Caesar that a census of the whole country should be taken. The decree was from Cesare Panabianco, the president of the country. It was the decimal year proper for the census, and there was nothing unusual about the decree. Certain provisions, however, were made for taking a census of the drifters and decrepits who were usually missed, to examine them and to see why they were so. It was in the course of this that Albert was picked up. If any man ever looked like a drifter and a decrepit, it was Albert. Albert was herded in with other derelicts, sat down at a table and asked torturous questions as, "What is your name?" And he almost muffed that one, but he rallied and answered, "Albert. What time is it by that clock?" They had him there in his old weak spot. Which hand was which? He gaped and didn't answer. "Can you read?"
Not without my, I don't have with me, no, I can't read very well by myself."
"Try." They gave him a paper to mark up with true and false questions. Albert marked them all true, believing that he would have half of them right. But they were all false. The regularized people are partial to falsehood. Then they gave him a supply of the word test on Proverbs.
In time saves nine.
Contained more mathematics than Albert could handle.
"Well, there appear to be six unknowns," he told himself. "And only one positive value, nine. The equating verb saves is a vague one. I can't solve this equation. I'm not even sure that it is an equation. If only I had with me my..."
But he didn't have any of his gadgets or machines with him. He was on his own. He left half a dozen more proverb fill-ins blank. Then he saw a chance to recoup. Nobody is so dumb as not to know one answer if enough questions are asked. "Blank is the mother of invention," it said. And Albert wrote in his weird, ragged hand, "Stupidity." Then he sat back in triumph.
"I know that Urema and her mother, man, how I do know them."
But they marked him wrong on that one, too. He had missed every question to every test. They began to fix him a ticket to a progressive booby hatch where he might learn to do something with his hands, his head being hopeless. A couple of Albert's urbane machines came down and got him out of it. They explained that while he was a drifter and a derelict, yet he was a rich drifter and a derelict, and that he was even a man of some note.
He doesn't look it, but he really is, pardon our laughter, a man of some importance,"
one of the fine machines explained.
"He has to be told to close his mouth after he has yawned, but for all that, he's the winner of the Finnerty Hawkman Award. We'll be responsible for him."
Albert was miserable as his fine machines took him out, especially when they asked that he walk three or four steps behind them and not seem to be with them. They gave him some pretty rough banter and then turned him into a squirming worm of a man. Albert left them and went to a little hideout he kept.
I'll blow my crawfishing brains out. The humiliation is more than I can bear. Can't do it myself, though. I'll have to have it done."
He set to work building a device in his hideout. "What are you doing, boss?" Hunchy asked him. "I had a hunch you'd come here and start building something."
"I'm building a machine to blow my pumpkin-picking brains out. I'm too yellow to do it myself."
"Hey, boss, I got a hunch there's something better to do. Let's have some fun."
"I don't believe I know how to. I built a fun machine once to do it for me. He had a real good time till he flew apart, but he never seemed to do anything for me."
"Wow, this fun will be for you and me, boss. Consider the world spread out. What is it?"
Well, it's a world too fine for me to live in any longer. Everything and all the people are perfect and all alike. They're at the top of the heap. They want it all and arrange it all neatly. There's no place for a clutter-up like me in the world. So, I'll get out.
Boss, I've got a hunch that you're seeing it wrong. You've got better eyes than that. Look again. Real canny at it. Now, what do you see?
Hunchy, is that possible? Is that really what it is? I wonder why I never noticed it before. That's the way of it, though, now that I look closer.
6 billion patsies waiting to be took, boss. 6 billion patsies without a defense of any kind. A couple of guys out for some fun, man. They could mow them down like fields of Albert improved concho wheat. Boss, I've got a hunch. This is what I was made for. The world sure has been getting stuffy. Let's tie into it and eat off the top layer. Man, we can cut a swath.
Yeah, we'll inaugurate a new era. Yeah, we'll call it the turning of the worm. We'll have fun, Hunchy. We'll gobble them up like goobers. How come I never saw it like that before? 6 billion patsies.
The 21st century began on this rather odd note. That story is titled Urema's Dam by R.A. Lafferty. It appeared in the book New Dimensions 2, a collection edited by Robert Silverberg. I'm Michael Hansen. Technical production for MindWebs by Phil Corriveau. MindWebs comes to you from WHA Radio in Madison, a service of University of Wisconsin Extension.